Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with the New England Patriots. Sam Darnold, he saw ghosts last night.
See dead people.
I saw clown suits and my bookie. Bill Belichick did it again. He made a fool out of an inexperienced quarterback and an old, stubborn, foolish gambler. I wish my passion for rooting against Belichick and the Patriots was just a television gimmick. It's not. It's costing me real money, causing real damage to my football credibility. Once again, despite my better judgment, I was the fool parting with his money last night. I thought Darnold and the Jets would build off the momentum of beating the Cowboys and play a one-possession game against the New England Patriots. Patriots won 33-0. Darnold turned the ball over five times and complained of seeing ghosts. I tossed and turned all night, wondering how or why I was so stupid. Just 12 days ago, here are actual text messages between me and the comedian actor Eric Griffin. Griff was in Vegas and asked for my gambling advice on the Giants-Patriots game. I repeatedly told him it makes no sense to bet against Bill Belichick. None. How do you say that 12 days ago and do what I did last night? I have Belichick derangement syndrome. I'm part of the Patriots resistance movement. It's crazy. I don't even dislike Belichick. I'm just sick and tired of the Patriots winning. My delusion is causing me to miss out on celebrating a new wrinkle in the Patriots dynasty. The 2019 season is shaping up to be Belichick's magnum opus. The New England defense is vying for the title of the greatest of all time. The Patriots defense is surrendering fewer points and yards than the 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens. Woo. The Bears and the Ravens were led by all-time great middle linebackers Mike Singletary and Ray Lewis. Do the Patriots have a middle linebacker? I can't name him. Is it Jamie Collins? The Patriots have the best cornerback in football, Stephon Gilmore. No one would recognize him in a police lineup. You can't recognize any of the Patriots defenders by face or even number. Belichick is the only face or name you're going to remember from this unit. I don't think it's his goal, but this season is going to end all debate about who is most responsible for the Patriots dynasty, Belichick or Brady. It's Belichick. The Patriots are 7-0 and have a point differential of plus 175. They're winning games by an average margin of 25 points. Belichick wants this Patriots team to be regarded as the best in the modern era. That's why, after destroying the Jets, he gave up a second-round pick for receiver Mohamed Sanu. Belichick is chasing perfection. He almost had it in 2007 with a team led by a historic offense and Tom Brady. Brady is a passenger on the 2019 team led by a historic defense. Belichick is the GOAT of GOATs. He towers over Brady. And that is no knock on Tom Brady. Belichick is the greatest force we've seen in football. I will never, ever again bet against him. I promise this time.
Aww.
All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts.
Pinky swear.
TJ Houshmandzadeh and LeVar Arrington. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Please do.
Is Belichick clearly now more valuable than Tom Brady?
I'm not so clear about what I just heard. Is that your way of apologizing to me after yesterday?
Apologizing to you? Yeah. I lost money.
You lost money?
But you apologize to my accountant.
I tried to warn you, big dog. I'm sure Parched over here would love some Casa Dragona. I'll let that go. I digress. Belichick is more important, more valuable than Tom Brady. And it's pretty simple. It's pretty matter of fact. One, his contributions are greater than just playing the quarterback position at GOAT status. Not only is he affecting the defense schematically, philosophy, and maybe even some of the defensive play calling, but he's affecting those guys on that side of all special teams, places where Tom Brady can't have the same effect. Two, he actually made Tom Brady a GOAT. And that's not to say that Tom Brady hasn't done his part, but he drafted a sixth rounder and turned him into the best quarterback ever. Huh? That doesn't happen every day. So for who's the better of the two in GOAT status is the one that made the other one. And here's my last consideration for Belichick being the greatest influence in football history. Forget player, coach, Mount Rushmore, like the greatest in history in value to the sport. Another top coach, top 10 for sure, maybe Mount Rushmore, is Bill Parcells. And I remember them having their Shaq-Kobe beef. Who's going to win more without the other? How did that scoreboard turn out? Bill Parcells did not win another Super Bowl without Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has went to 9 and won 6. My point is the value to our sport, to this organization, to this team, second to none, is Bill Belichick.
Oh, man, I disagree with that one. Last time I checked, Bill Belichick ain't getting on the field, throwing no touchdown passes. He ain't working out in the offseason. He's not putting his body through what Tom Brady. He's a part of it. He's a part of the success, but who's more valuable? The most valuable player is the guys that's getting on the field. You can have the best scheme in the world. If they don't execute it, you are going to lose the game, period. Like, there's not one coach that's more valuable than a player because the players have to actually get out on the field and execute what the coach has designed and drawn up. Yeah, you can teach me and you can show me this or that. If I'm not mentally...
Who would you rather lose? Stephon Gilmore or Bill Belichick?
Gilmore.
You
asked me who would I rather lose, Brady or Belichick?
Who would you rather lose?
Belichick.
Ooh. Ooh.
No.
Yeah.
Ooh. Your team just got worse.
Ooh. And we will never find out. But as players, we know this.
No, we don't.
The coach can put you in advantageous situations. And if you don't capitalize on it and do it, it does not matter.
Mm-hmm. We just experienced matter. That on Friday night. Hey, you were there.
Hey, I'm going with
you
Belichick.
About the coach not mattering Friday night?
Yes. I'm going with Belichick.
That's on Thursdays, too.
I think that's great. I think it's great insight from TJ. But the things that come to mind when I think about Belichick is development and process. The development with his coaches, the development with his players, and the culture. Same goes with the process, with the coaches, the players, and the culture. He has put such a well-fine-tuned process and plan for development in place that he can lose a coach, bring another coach in.
Yes.
They don't skip a beat. He can lose a player. I mean, you can throw the Matt Castle thing in there. Everybody says, oh, yes, that matters. They did not skip a beat when they lost Tom Brady.
They made the playoffs. They
didn't make the playoffs. Their record was not reflective of them losing and missing a beat in terms of the way that their process was being executed. So where I'll agree with you saying that players
overplay. Can I cut
overplays.
You off really quick?
How many
years was Belichick a head coach without Tom Brady? How many Super Bowls did he win? Go ahead and finish. Sorry.
Okay, but here's the thing. I played against Tom Brady in college. Tom Brady was a fine football player in college, but never was good enough to be that guy. He was never that guy. Drew Brees was the guy in college, in the Big Ten and in all of college. Drew Brees was that guy. I never saw what Tom Brady was now in college.
Nope.
So that says to me, when I played against Tom Brady as a pro, I was like, whoa, hold on. I used to whoop you. How are we down
it's
like this right now?
It's called getting better. Got better.
And that takes a coach putting you in the process. He got better and became a GOAT. I was just playing on the team. It is about the environment that you're in. And I think Bill Belichick has built that.
Y'all wrong.
You're wrong. Here's one. Let's just, now you're going to make us do this. All right, since we're just comparing these two, this is no shot at two goats, but one of these goats is bigger. Belichick has bailed Brady out in many a moments, including the Super Bowl last year, including the playoffs when Brady was getting worse every single round of the playoffs.
You're correct.
Let's go to the
Super Bowl prior to that against Atlanta. Who bailed who out?
Hold on.
Okay,
we're not done.
Go ahead.
What about the first three Super Bowls when it was special teams and defense? So that's four already. Defense. We four out of six already, TJ, that Belichick defense. Certainly has beaten Tom Brady. And I'm not trying to make same – Brady didn't have his impact. It's just the fact that when you score 13 points, are you supposed to win that game? No. But Belichick makes sure you win that game because the other team only has 3 points.
Yeah.
And then you talk about longevity. We're saying valuable to this organization. Belichick was there before Brady, going to be there after Brady, where that's a value differentiator when you're talking about, okay, we did comparable things, but I'm going to do it for longer. So even in that situation, there's no way Brady's going.
Here's my other point on this, PJ, is that Belichick's getting better. Tom Brady isn't getting better. We are seeing, this is his magnum opus. This is his Thriller. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club or whatever.
Brady does what's necessary.
No. I understand that. He's been a defensive genius. But this is next level. Nobody knows these guys. If they walked in here right now, we wouldn't recognize any of them. And they are potentially going to be the best defense we've ever seen. And just keep, he lost defensive coordinators back-to-back years.
Yes.
And so in this year, he's like, oh, I'm going to do this. Mm. And I'm going to show y'all how it's really done. Mm. And that's what I have to accept, that I've been reluctant to accept. I've been blaming schedule, but it's like, this dude went back into the kitchen and said, oh, I'm going to show you
But that's a process, too. Willie McGinnis, yeah. Lawyer Malloy, ooh. Teddy Bruschi, Ty Law. All right, you're talking about guys that are Hall of Fame level guys. On the offensive side, you got David Patton and Troy Brown, right? Now, even though we're looking at them now as champions, and that's what got the whole thing going, they were coming out as the underdogs. We are the unknowns. When they went against that greatest show on turf and started this whole dynasty, they were coming out as the unknowns. He is repeating the process over and over again.
Down the field, wins the Super Bowl.
Again.
On the defense.
Well, but you're proving the point.
What kind of crazy plays that it took?
It don't matter. Plays were made.
But you're proving the point that the defense was able to affect and impact the games that they lost to those New York Giants both times. I missed one of those Super Bowls by 1 year.
You're the best coach in the world. You have to execute. You have to get it
done. There's no question.
You have to get it done.
But you got the best players in the world, and if you don't have a coach that can get you to the
right
places and
in
the right situations.
Now, I don't want to do this.
Do it.
But are they having a great year right now? Absolutely. Play the Steelers, 28th ranked offense. Play the Dolphins, 31st ranked offense. Play the Jets, 32nd ranked offense. Play the Redskins, 29th ranked offense. The closest game they had was with the Bills, and they're the 17th ranked offense.
I made this argument in the back room.
Right, it doesn't matter who you play.
It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
And the annals, the question being, will this Patriots team go down as an all-time great? If you look at the statistical categories 20 years from now, and they didn't lose a game and won the Super Bowl, we will not be breaking down
what the Steelers and those other teams did. But we're talking about it today, and so we're going to look at it because that's what we're talking about.
I got something for you. Here we go. Here we go. Let me reset the table right here. I'm going to bring this story home because I got drafted with someone who is known as one of the greats out of New England, Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. Now, Mike Vrabel in college was good to great. I don't know how
Nobody remember him.
But,
not from college.
Right.
Yeah, don't know.
And then he gets drafted to Pittsburgh. Same year I got drafted after me.
That's the only reason why I loved him.
Hey, look, he's head coach of the Tennessee Titans now, doing a great job down there. I remember
But go ahead.
He's doing a great job.
Tennessee
was horrible.
Continue, go.
He ain't winning. All right. So I looked at Vrabel. I was like, oh, okay. He went to big school, Ohio State. You know, I'm like, all right, Vrabel going to be something. He got drafted after me. I was like, dang, I didn't know that. Whatever. We get into the league. First 4 years, Vrabel has 7 sacks with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I was like, ooh, that's not adding up, right? Mm-hmm. Then he goes to New England.
And now all of a sudden he gets touchdowns.
48 sacks.
Sack after sack.
And I'm like, hold on. And I'm sitting there with pure jealousy in my heart because, one, I'm like, if I was in that system, I would do X because I'm doing this over here and it's harder. I've been on teams before where coach would blitz us into the play. We'll make that play. And I've been on teams where coach blitz us away from the play and then everybody yelling at us, what the hell are you out there doing? I'm like, we're playing human chess.
Yeah.
Our coach is putting us in bad situations. So, TJ, just to bring it home, man, I've seen it with my own eyes, guys who've been cut from the same cloth. They get better in that situation, in that system.
Here's the other point, TJ, and you're right about it. They've played a soft schedule. But the Cowboys, who allegedly are loaded on defense, played the Jets offense.
Yeah.
Got clown suit.
Bank.
Other teams are playing these teams that the Patriots are beating up on. They're not embarrassing them the way the New England defense is embarrassing.
Belichick, when you play for Belichick, they're going to play disciplined football. And that's what he does. He instills that in you to where you're going to play disciplined football or you're not going to play. These other coaches, They don't do this. And that's where he's above everybody else. We're going to play discipline, football. Oh, you supposed to drop, LeVar. I ain't dropping on this. I'm blitzing. You try that with Belichick, you on the sideline.
And there's been a lot of coaches that have tried to do that. There have been a lot of coaches that have tried.
Here's what you need to do, TJ, honest to goodness. You need to coach high school football. And I'm not saying that to be judged.
I have.
I'm talking about as the hit. It's hurt. Getting a bunch of human beings to do what you want them to do is one of the hardest things to do in life. Oof. Y'all sitting here married. Oof. Hurting one person to do what you do. Hard as hell. 53? With a bunch of money in their pocket?
Preach, Whit.
And this dude is getting them to be as disciplined as you talk about? Grown men?
When you had Belichick success, if you don't do it, you're not going to be here.
Hey, no, man. Don't do that.
But nobody else is doing it.
Don't do that.
Iceberg Bill Belichick.
Nobody else is even close to doing that.
Yeah. They haven't built up the equity that Bill Belichick has.
Not you act like he was born with that equity. He built earn it. He built that. And everybody else is
Levy. Not Bill Walsh.
No.
Not Coach Chuck Noll. No other. Not Bill Parcells. No other coach has done what Bill Belichick is doing.
What's so damning about this? Like TJ, many people won't give them their proper credit, their proper due, because of expectations. There's such an abundance of riches because of the equity that he built that now he's going to get judged against himself instead of against his competition.
And his developed
quarterback. Which he's greater than. I'm going to give you this for contrast, TJ. Listen to this. So we know the Patriots right now, we're like, is this an all-time defense? No, look who they play. Blah, blah, blah. But they are being judged because they won the last Super Bowl, they lost the Super Bowl before that, and they won the one before that. Jeez. Now, let me give you the 85 Bears, the year before they were the 85 Bears, 84 Bears, 10-6, conference championship loss. So, not the same as the Patriots. Now, let's go to the Ravens, 2000 Ravens. You know what the 99 Ravens were? 8-8, missed the playoffs. Mm. So, when you are sitting there watching a team be mediocre or kind of good, boom, surge, you give them credit. You give them respect. You feel a part of that. Empower them.
Pats ain't going nowhere.
Pats ain't
going
nowhere.
I give them credit. It's not more than Brady.
Time now for a big story. Let's move to Chicago, where the Bears are looking for answers after getting dominated at home by a shorthanded Saints team Sunday. Mitchell Trubisky made his return and was as underwhelming as ever, prompting Yahoo's Dan Wetzel to suggest the Bears should move on from Mitch and trade for Cam Newton. There were high hopes for Trubisky coming into the year, but he hasn't lived up, ranking near the bottom of the league in several major passing categories, including yards per attempt, yards per game, touchdowns, and passer rating. Dan Wetzel, one of the smartest men in sports journalism, is exactly right here. I think if I'm the Bears, I try to make a play for Cam Newton. If I'm the Carolina Panthers, I try to get a draft, really high draft picks for Cam.
Is Dan still the smartest man if you disagree with him? Because it was convenient for that to say.
Yeah.
He is smart, but he's wrong. This is a 3-3 team, right?
Yeah.
This is a team that beat the best team in that division, the Minnesota Vikings, one of those three wins. This is a team that is in better position than the Dallas Cowboys, who were in the NFC last year, who were 3-5, ended up 10-6 in the playoffs. Why are you hitting the panic button right now? One, I don't think it's time in terms of you have six divisional games left. You can make up all of the losses right now. Two, you break that glass in case of emergency right now, everybody's on their last strike. Top down. And I don't think that this is a situation where you want to do that. Do you really want to throw out Trubisky right now? Do you really want Matt Nagy to be in this kind of jeopardy right now off of a 3-3 start when you beat the best team in your division? I love the Packers after last week especially, but inconsistent in terms of offensive production even though they're winning. You're not scared of Detroit. What's the panic button for right now? Dan is smart.
Quarterback's terrible.
Quarterback is regressed. Last year, he wasn't terrible. So we got to know, we got a mixed bag of nuts right here. What are we going to do? Me, I stay pat.
If Cam Newton is healthy, you got to go get him. Because he, not only will he upgrade you at the quarterback position, he's going to bring some enthusiasm and some belief into the locker room. Guys are going to feel like, man, we got a chance now. Cam Newton's on the team. And so just from that, oh, man, we got Cam. The way they practice, the way they approach the game is going to be completely different. They're going to come with a new energy just because they feel like they have a chance. A lot of guys don't feel like they have a chance with Mitchell Trubisky right now. He's averaging 167 yards passing. And with the way the rules are this year, that's terrible.
You're right. Mm.
I think you got to go after Cam if you have the opportunity to do so. While I agree with you in that, you didn't mention the Oakland game as well. They very easily could have won, pulled out that Oakland game over the pond as well. But the reason why I like the Cam play is, for one, he's being dogged by us on this show, dogged by people who are analyzing what this Carolina Panthers team is doing right now. So Cam, lighting his stogie, you know, with his scarf tied around his neck, and he's letting people know how he really feels. I'm not going to go out here and do anything if I'm not the Superman that I was before. So the ideology that's flowing through Cam right now is, if I can't be who I need to be, then I'm not going to go back on the field and be that guy. So maybe that ship has sailed in Carolina. You give him a new environment with a defense. He's used to playing with good defenses. This Bears defense is pretty talented.
Top five, yeah.
He's got some weapons on the offensive side of the ball. And even though I wouldn't pull the ripcord on Trubisky and panic and do that, as you're saying, I don't think that it's a bad play to go after Cam.
I'm going to tell you why it's a great play. You get him for 6-8 games this year. You get to evaluate, because you can get out from underneath his contract. And so you run him out there this year. You're not committed to him long term. If it doesn't walk, if it doesn't work out, then you just draft a young guy. But you get a nice look at Cam. You get to evaluate him and decide if you want to move forward with him. I just think there's a lot of people that are in consensus that Trubisky, isn't working. Mm-hmm. He's not the guy. And they have a defense that's ready to win now. An offense that's pretty good if the quarterback play is there. I would make the move, evaluate Cam, because you're not winning a Super Bowl. You're not winning the postseason with Trubisky. I don't even think you make it to the postseason right now with Trubisky.
I'm going to see how broke y'all were growing up. Remote control cars. Y'all remember the remote control cars?
Absolutely.
You remember that? It had them 4 battery packs or something? You never got it with the damn car, but you had to go get it. And then...
That ain't broke, though.
Yeah.
Broke.
I ain't had broke no remote control
with the cord. That was broke. That's not so...
Or just not so
I was richer than y'all, and I was poor. All right, here we go. And then the batteries go dead. So what do? You don't throw them out. Put them in the freezer, right? Try to get a little more...
Yeah, you put the things
I told y'all I was broke. So put them in the freezer. Every time you put them in the freezer, then you take them out and put them back in. How much juice you got left in there?
Not much.
Not much. Cam's been on ice, brother. You've been in that freezer. Is Cam right? Mentally, physically. All right, the batteries in the freezer. Put them in. How much you gonna get out of that? I'm not dissing Cam. I just don't know how much juice is in those batteries. Here's the thing.
That sounds bad.
There's new energy in Carolina. There's new energy on that team. Is there going to be new energy in Chicago if you take those batteries and put it into this situation? Or should you do what we all figured out when we were young? Just wait, save up, grandma hook me up, somebody give me some damn batteries.
You know what it is right now?
That's what they need to do.
You know what it is right now, Chicago? They've already put the batteries in the freezer, put them back in, they done. And so at least he going to come out the freezer with a little juice, and you get a little energy. You can play with the car a little bit.
But now you're going to go in Carolina's freezer and pull out their batteries.
You're just robbing freezers.
Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by Fox MLB analyst Tom Verducci, who is in Houston for Game 1 of the World Series, which you can catch tonight on Fox. Start with an easy one. Which team has the edge in starting pitching?
I thought you said that was an easy one. I'll go with the Nationals in terms of quantity. Anibal Sanchez as your number 4. I'll sign up for that. But I'm all about the top of the food chain. And right now, if you drafted starting pitchers in this World Series, Gerrit Cole's number 1. There's no question about that. I think this postseason is about Gerrit Cole the way 14 was about Madison Bumgarner. And again, no disrespect to Scherzer and Strasburg, Corbin. They're awesome. But Gerrit Cole right now, he hasn't lost a game since May the 22nd. That's how good he's been for so long. So I'll give the Astros the edge starting pitching.
All right, you talked about top of the food chain. So is Jose Altuve the best player in the World Series?
I'm going to say yes. And again, I love Anthony Rendon, fantastic player. It's a pleasure to watch Juan Soto take pitches, not just hit them. But to me, Altuve is the guy, man. What makes him so tough is he can hit pitches for base hits that are not strikes. So if you try to pitch around him, he can still beat you. And we know he's a terrific base runner, a great defender. Man, this is one of my favorite players to watch because he gives 100% all the time, both sides of the baseball. So I'd say Altuve is the best player all around.
Hold on, Tom. I've heard two things I want you to clarify. Gerrit Cole, I thought you said the most of this series is about him, but Jose Altuve is the best player. Distinguish that for me. How is it about Gerrit Cole or is it about Jose Altuve?
Well, Altuve can influence more games, obviously. I think when Cole pitches, there's a lot of pressure on the Astros to win those games he starts. And he has delivered so far, 3-0 in the postseason with an 0-4-0. So he can take care of two games by himself. I mean, obviously, they'll have to score a little bit.
Yep.
But Altuve can influence games in so many different ways. If I'm the Washington Nationals pitchers and I look through that lineup, I'm circling his name. I'm highlighting it. I'm saying, I can't let that guy beat us.
All right, Nationals clinched a week ago. Will the long layoff hurt them at all?
It's not good for the Nationals. Listen, there's been six other teams that have had 6 days off going into the World Series. Results are mixed. They're 3-3. I don't draw anything from that. But what I've found with those teams is usually game one is a clunker. So I don't think rest is something that's going to show up the entire series. I do think it's an issue for the hitters coming out of the gate in game one and maybe even defensively. I remember the Rockies, they were as hot as any team I've seen in the postseason in 07, and they walked into Boston for game one after having 8 days off and just laid an egg in Boston. It was just a terrible game. That could happen to the Nats, but I don't think it's something that will last throughout the series.
Now, Tom, we've come a long way since that 2014 SI cover, talking about the Houston Astros being the great experiment in those Moneyball days. Is this the next dynasty that we're witnessing, the Houston Astros in baseball?
It could very well be. Now, our definition of dynasties changed a little bit, right? We haven't seen back-to-back winners in the World Series since the Yankees in 2000. That's the longest stretch in World Series history. But when you're talking about a team competing for the World Championship year in, year out, yes, the Astros fit that bill. Now, the last 3 years, they've had over 100 wins, and they're going for their second World Championship in the three-year period. There's only been a couple of teams that have done that. Go back to the late 20s with the Philadelphia A's, the Cardinals during the war years in the 40s. I think the Astros are playing for history in this series because if they do win this series, you will hear a lot of talk about where do they stack up all time, not just this generation of teams.
Tom, if they do become a dynasty, if they do become the team in Major League Baseball, is that good for baseball? Are they sexy enough?
I think they are. And I think the fact that they've been on the postseason stage now three straight years in our living rooms in prime time, there's a lot of known characters on this team, right? The core of the team has stayed together, especially the infielders, Bregman, Correa, Altuve, Gurriel. We kind of know them like we knew the Yankees in the 90s because they were on our TV at 8 o'clock every night in October. I think that's good for the game. I think it's good. What really stands out for me, this is a team that is not satisfied, that is not complacent with winning. I just talked about how hard it is to repeat. A lot of that is complacency, let's be honest. I don't see that at all with this Houston Astros team. As A.J. Hinch said, we love the expectation of winning. We love winning, but we also love the expectation of winning. They're expected to win this series. Let's see how it plays out.
If the Nationals win this, who's the X factor that may drive them to pull an upset?
I think it's going to be Juan Soto, which is really not a surprise. He is their cleanup hitter, but he turns 21 on Friday. He has seen a ton of breaking balls throughout this postseason. Why? He's an incredibly gifted fastball hitter. You look at the Astros staff, Cole Verlander in particular, they're going to throw fastballs to Juan Soto. Just be careful. And I know they have great fastballs, but this guy can turn around anybody's fastball, especially up in the zone. So I think there'll be situations for the first time this postseason where Juan Soto will get challenged with fastballs, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's up to that challenge.
Tom, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great call tonight.
You got it, Jason.
Whitlock and Wiley joined now by Yahoo Sports senior NBA insiders, Chris Haynes. The NBA season tips off tonight. All right, let's start right here in Los Angeles, where the Lakers will take on the Clippers.
You know?
In the first battle of the NBA's most interesting rivalry this year, Kawhi Leonard is making his debut with the new look Clippers. though Paul George is still out recovering from shoulder surgery. But the Lakers will be at full strength with LeBron taking the court alongside Anthony Davis, facing sky-high expectations after last year's disaster of a season. Lakers not quite at full strength, no Kyle Kuzma tonight. But I say all the pressure tonight is on LeBron James. He's got to deliver, coming off this China deal. And with the Clippers not at full strength without Paul George, all the pressure on LeBron James, and maybe a close number two would be Frank Vogel.
Wow. I can't argue that. I'm looking a little bigger picture than that. I think all the pressure is on the jersey that he's wearing, the Lakers. The Lakers have abandoned plan, and then LeBron has been the scapegoat of them abandoning that plan. They know that the Lakers franchise is not built on let's invest in our talent, let's go homegrown, and let's rebuild. But they tried it. Remember? This is the same organization that hasn't been in the playoffs the last 6 years. LeBron's only been here once. So this is bigger than LeBron James. It's bigger than Nino Brown. And let's talk about what that plan was. That plan was Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, and even Zubac. And none of them on the squad right now. And this was a team that couldn't make the playoffs, and they were trying to invest in that homegrown talent and let those seeds blossom. And finally they said, the king is alive, and the king is out there. Let's bring him here. And now everything falls on LeBron, who still put up his numbers, but the Lakers brand has not been restored to where it once was. And that's on Jeannie Buss. The criticism of her not being able to make the executive decision necessary, having the executive plan, not making the playoffs since Dr. Buss, unfortunately, has left. This is an organization that needs to restore that more so than LeBron needs to say he's the king.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you.
I know you would.
Most of your points. Most of your points.
All of it.
But I will say, you know, as far as the pressure, you know, on tonight's game, minimum pressure. You know, it's still one game. You know, but this is probably one of the most anticipated season openers I've ever remember in recent memory. And I've gone to the last five season openers of the biggest games. And just the magnitude of both LA teams being relevant and having championship aspirations at the same time, that hasn't been the case here in a long time. But I will say this. If we're comparing the pressure on the Clippers and Lakers, there's no doubt about it. It's all the Lakers. Yeah. And yes, the Lakers uniform has a bit of a role to play in it. But I will say this. Wherever LeBron James goes, and he has talent that is considered to be talent of championship caliber, he's going to have pressure to the max.
Yeah.
That's what the situation here is in L.A. Regardless they win or lose today, I think tonight, no Paul George, obviously, I think the Lakers are going to blow him out. That's just
– Totally disagree. Totally.
Yeah, please get him before I get him.
Blowout? Are you kidding me?
Where are you coming from?
Yes. Kawhi Leonard is fitting to put that claw on LeBron James.
Terminate.
Again, I'm not saying he's going to stop, but this is going to be a fight tonight. This is going even without Paul George, styles make fights. And Kawhi Leonard is the one guy that, particularly with LeBron at this age, can be a problem for LeBron James. Huh. And I think it starts tonight, even without Paul George.
Terminator.
Just similar to how you're blinded by my watch right here. Right?
Oh!
You're blind. You're blinded by Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi can't do it all right now. He can't do it.
He did it all last year.
I understand.
He won a championship.
I'm going to tell you right now.
What?
I was at that preseason game last week, Lakers and Clippers.
You just said preseason?
I said preseason. But let me tell you something that stood out to me during that preseason.
That it didn't count.
I saw it. That's fine to count. Mm-hmm. But the players were there. And I saw LeBron James, 6'8", playing the point guard position. I seen Avery Bradley at 6'3", long for to be 6'3". I seen on the perimeter Danny Green, 6'7". I seen Anthony Davis, 6'10". I seen JaVale McGee, 7'1". All that wingspan out there. Oh. Hey, hold on. I didn't even mention Kyle Kuzma at 6'10", when he comes back.
I ain't gonna lie.
I've never seen so much length on the floor. When they all put their hands out on the court, they take up the bulk of the floor. When you add that with the pieces they got on the bench, that is a potent weapon, Jason Whitlock. And that's why I'm saying Kawhi Leonard can't do it all by himself when he got all those arms all around on that court.
I mean, did Lou Williams, did he retire? Did Montrezl Harrell, did he retire?
Can we keep talking? I mean, you act like
that's pieces.
What's been the best bench in NBA history in scoring duo?
It's the Clippers.
The Clippers. Who has the deeper team?
And Lou Williams.
The deeper team. And we didn't poach our team to create something new.
We just put two cherries on top. Think about this. We already had a deep team. We already had a team that could go out there and get it. And then we added Paul George. We added Paul, the claw. We didn't
Paul?
Take anything
you
away.
Paul, huh? How many Paul giving y'all tonight?
How many Kuzma? All right,
we're talking about tonight.
All right, tonight.
Oh, listen. If we think a big picture, I got the Clippers.
Okay.
I picked the Clippers to win.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I've been talking tonight.
Because, again, we haven't even mentioned Doc Rivers, who I think is headed for a tremendous season and is going to make a real difference between the Clippers and the Lakers. So I love the Clippers tonight in an upset. At least it's going to be a dog. For Patrick Beverley, these guys are going to put up a big fight.
It's all right. On.
Let's move to the Pelicans.
What up?
Who tip off their season tonight against the Raptors, but will be without the services of Zion Williamson, who is expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks after having surgery on his right knee. There have long been concerns about the top pick size and durability, and Zion has now injured the same knee twice in the last 9 months, prompting USA Today to write that it's officially time to be worried about his health. I'm going to go a step further. It's officially time to be like, ooh, is this Greg Oden 2.0? And at the very least, what we know, and I say this with affinity and respect for Zion, no disrespect, he's got to lose weight. He's got to come down 25, 30 pounds. His body his knees can't handle. He's at 20?
Yeah.
You got two, or 19, you got two knee problems? I'm concerned.
I'm concerned as well. The physics should make you concerned. He's in a blessed and cursed position. He is enormous with that physicality. And I'm basing it on his level of explosiveness, his level of torque, his level of burst. He's enormous for that. And that's a positive and it's a negative. And the negative is a lot of people don't understand when you hear an athlete say, in his prime, LeBron James even did it. Went no carbs for the summer and lost like 10 pounds. Remember? He was already a statue. People don't understand that when you're in prime shape, for every pound of body weight, it's 9 pounds of body pressure. Think about that. So when a guy tells you, I lost 10 pounds, his body says, I lost 90 pounds of resistance off of me. Now, when you talk about Zion right now and his baby fat, you talk about Zion right now not being in fighting shape. He's in basketball shape. I give you that. But we all know as athletes, we always say, are you in fighting shape? And that's a whole different animal. What's happening now is the body is responding to this physics. And it's as simple as this. Every doctor would tell you, what's the first thing to go? It's either your foot or it's going to be those hips. And his feet, he's had 2 foot issues, he's had 3 knee issues, and he's 20 years young. This is someone telling you right now, and David Griffin, please listen, I know you're trying to help him by not having a negative connotation of he's overweight, that's why he's getting injured, that he's lazy. He's not lazy. He has a different physical demand and dynamic that he has to respect, or this is going to continue to break down because of his size.
I know David Griffin. I've covered the Cavs when he was a general manager over there. And he has a way of sometimes saying one thing publicly that's going to protect the player. Mm. They know he has to lose some weight. They know it. And he brushed back on that today during a conference this morning, saying that weight wasn't a factor in this injury. We don't know that for sure, but I can tell you right now, it probably didn't help. Mm. Now, I'll say this. The last person, you know, when you think about a player of Zion Williamson's ability, his leaping ability, the torque that he puts, when he explodes, you can just see the level of gravity in which his legs and his calves just tighten up when he's about to take off. The last person I seen do that was Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose and the way that he exploded and lifted, it had his toll. And Derrick Rose is a 6'3". 200-pound specimen, somebody who we look at those measurements and we look, that's a great physical build. But still, that style of play and the way that he exploded still was too much for his body.
Yeah.
So imagine for somebody that's 6'6", 275 pounds, it can't happen. He has to lose weight.
I'm going to tell you what my fear is as well, though, because he will come down on weight. I'm a little bit concerned that's going to affect his effectiveness.
It would, yeah.
Because I think part of He's so big, that's part of his skill and ability to dominate. And I don't know if he'll be the exact same player if he's 245 pounds. You know, when Charles Barkley lost weight, he was still Charles Barkley and the round mound of rebound and all that. I'm not sure if it's going to be the exact same for Zion Williamson.
Yeah, that's why for me a greater comp is Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin came in this league exploding on everyone. Not the same build, but a big guy, not small at all. If you know Blake Griffin, has some mass to him, but no one is like Zion. But here's the thing about being that explosive and having that burst. It's not the jumping that kills you. It's the landing. Mm-hmm. Bruh, that's 275 hitting wood.
Yeah.
Every single second.
And wood ain't soft.
And that wood's not soft if you ever fallen on it. And here's the point. Doctors will tell him, and someone needs to get into his ear. I had a friend, confidentially, who was working out with Zion this summer in Los Angeles, saying, look, we understood the demands placed on him. Commercial here, endorsement opportunity there. You're getting pulled left to right. You just got drafted. So he wasn't in prime shape. But you need to lock yourself in and listen to the people that may say some things that sting, that hurt, but they're trying to look out for you. His physics, his body demands that Blake Griffin even said, I got to get out that paint. Now Blake Griffin's shooting 36% from three. Yeah. Like, you got to get out of that paint and all of that body banging or else.
And a good point that Whitlock made, he might have to adapt this game, but have we ever seen anything where a player might have to adapt this game at 19 to 20 years old?
Day one.
Chris Haynes and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's return to the NFL and the NBA.
Yeah.
All right, the Miami Dolphins announced they will punish safety Bobby McCain, who responded to taunts from a 13-year-old boy by threatening to spit in the boy's face and then actually spitting in the face of another fan. The child had allegedly shouted, "You're irrelevant," at McCain before the game. After the game, McCain confronted the child and a man who defended him. McCain spat on the man. Meanwhile, in the NBA, the players have pushed the league to adopt a zero-tolerance policy on objectionable fan behavior. According to the Associated Press, the league is changing and toughening its code of conduct for fans, especially putting those in closest proximity to the players and the court on alert that anything over the line will lead to ejections and possibly more. This is coming on the heels of incidents last year involving fans and star players Russell Westbrook, DeMarcus Cousins, and Kyle Lowry. I bring all this up because I believe there is a growing and dangerous two-way animosity developing between professional athletes and fans. The animosity, in my view, is a byproduct of social media interaction among fans and players. Athletes are constantly trolled over social media. The constant drumbeat of negativity is causing athletes to have a negative perception of fans. You can have 1,000 people tweet you positive feedback, and all it takes is 10 or 20 highly personal and negative tweets to change your view of the average fan, particularly for the athletes who engage in social media on game day. I'm not making excuses for McCain or any of the athletes. At their level of compensation, they should be able to ignore the taunts and the trolling. I believe the NBA is overreacting with its zero-tolerance policy. It's going to backfire on the league. Most of the players have the discipline not to overreact when they're taunted on the court by their peers. Why would the ramblings of a frustrated wannabe jock bother NBA player earning $20 million for playing a game? A week ago, we witnessed Richard Sherman lie about his pregame interaction with Baker Mayfield. You think athletes want to exaggerate or lie about their interaction with fans? To whom much is given, much is expected. The burden here should fall on the millionaire athletes, not the fans. Football fields and basketball courts are not safe spaces. If I ran the NFL or NBA, I'd pay the players an extra bonus for deleting their social media accounts. Ignoring the idiots on Twitter, Instagram, and inside arenas and stadiums is the best solution. All right, guys, Marcellus, get us started here. Do you think social media is turning athletes and fans against each other?
No, not at all. And I think this all came to a head and its most devastating moment in terms of fan and player interaction was the Malice in the Palace. And that happened in 04. That was 20 months before Twitter even came around. So social media wasn't what it was now, and only Facebook was even invented. So I wouldn't put this on social media. I wouldn't even put this on perception. I think this is a proximity issue that's combusting with
entitlement and clout chasing, which is something that right now, it's almost like the greed has run amok. To put the fans right there in the workplace, on the court, on the field. Like, even in NFL now, new stadiums, you run through a lounge to get to the field with the field seats, and everything is just to get the fans so much closer to the action, which is great. But you got to flip that coin and see the cons of that, especially in the NBA when the intimacy is there and you're sitting there and you're courtside and you got your Gucci shoes right there, right next to a beer, and you're pounding them back. And then there's a guy who's going to land on your wife in the third quarter. And then you getting your bad jokes off for several minutes to the point that he finally responds. I think that this is just a simple situation where there are a few fans and there are a few players. And it's sad that we have to legislate common sense into that environment, but it's just combustive because they're just too close to each other. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it happen with injuries and Paul George, and we see it sometimes with players. You're so close, and if you don't have common sense, we're going to have a few common occurrences.
I agree with you to a certain extent. I think that heat, being in the heat of the battle and not allowing players to, you know, simply process and do what they would do under normal conditions. I equate it to this, a similar situation. When I was in Cleveland in the media, I used to hate this. After a game, this one, when the Cavaliers were losing, you know, had a bad game. But after the game, they would allow the team broadcasters or the team employed media writers to ask the first couple of questions. So say it's after a bad loss, and then the media writers, you know, they get to ask the first two questions in the scrum. Hey, how are you doing? You know, I know you lost, but looking forward to next game, how you think this is going to help you out for next game? And then the player, that gets the player moving on and thinking about the next game. Now, I got to be the one to ask. Now the podium is mine. Now I got to be the one to ask, okay, we haven't moved on to that next game. Let's talk about what happened right now. Why do you have 10 turnovers? Then they're still in the heat of the battle because still not a lot of time for players to decompress. And I think that's the situation here when you have players going through the hallways, going through the tunnels, the corridors, passing these fans up. Some of these fans need to be dealt with in a certain type of way. But a lot of the onus, like you said, Whitlock, has to be on the players and keeping their composure.
I don't think that it turned athletes and fans against each other. I think that there was always a barrier there. The relationship between a fan and an athlete was largely was responsible by the media. It was the journalists. It was the interviews that gave you the opportunity to build a relationship with your athletes, with your favorite fans. I call it sideline pass syndrome and courtside seat syndrome, all right? The bulk of the fans aren't going to economically be able to sit close enough to actually even have that type of interaction with an athlete. An athlete isn't going to be close enough to hear what that fan is thinking, first of all. And that's even if that's the derogatory or the loving fan. But what has happened with social media is what I would say has stolen the mystique of what athletes represent. You're no different. You're really no different than the person you go to school with anymore. And that's what has happened. So I can feel comfortable enough to say, Marcellus, you're a clown, right? But if this is pre social media, you know what that dude is sitting there thinking? Marcellus is a clown, but I ain't gonna say it.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna say it, right? Social media has stolen
humanized.
It has humanized. Yeah. I can remember when I was growing up.
It's dehumanized, but go ahead.
I think it's humanizing in the sense that when I was walking through the mall, I can remember when I was in middle school, high school, I'd be walking in the mall and I see Greg Lloyd, LeVon Kirkland, and those guys, when people really still went to the malls and shopped, not online. I see them walking down and I'd be like, yo, that's Greg Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
You see people going up to him, you'd be like, it's Mr. Lloyd. You don't call me Greg. You don't know me, right? That was how Greg Lloyd was. You called him Mr. Lloyd after that. The point of the matter was, man, that was my one moment to see him and interact with him, right? Where now you can go on social media and real time you can communicate with these athletes. Athletes can communicate real time with the fans. So what has happened is that these fans have now become indoctrinated with how the athlete is thinking. And now the athlete is becoming indoctrinated with how the fan is thinking.
Perceptions of each other, though,
have changed.
I don't think it's reality. It's the percent. I think it only takes 5% of negative interaction on social media for people to jump to a conclusion like, man, this is how all these damn fans are. F the fans. Mm. And again, I think we're all kind of saying the same thing, because Marcellus, even your point, it's about there's the intimacy that's been created by sitting people on top of the court and around the fans. And this is a point I've made many, many times. All of this communication, from texting, everything, has damaged relationships in all regards. It's devalued communication. Again, we're all old enough, particularly us three over here. there wasn't even call waiting. There was one phone in the house, and communication was really valued.
Rotary.
To get on the phone with a girl really meant something.
Made an appointment to get that phone. Right.
It meant something, and there was value to it. Mm. Now, you might be texting 10 people at the same freaking time. Yeah. And so I just think all of this communication has created a hostility. The athletes, they love social media. Some of them go on social media at halftime, before the game, after the game. And there's an energy being created with these fantasy football players. You let my fantasy team down. Yeah. You screwed. And so now everybody gets, an athlete makes a mistake, and there's 1,000 people on Twitter killing them for it. Mm. And I don't blame the athletes for being on a bit edge, like, damn, these people don't appreciate me. They don't respect how hard this is, that we all make mistakes, and it actually matters more to the athlete when we lose than it does you as a fan. And I know you as a fan think it means more to you, but it just doesn't. It's too much communication.
There are fans that would fight that and say, look, I paid, and I love hearing this perspective. I paid to have the right to do what it is that I'm doing. I had these seats. My grandparents, my great-grandparents had these seats. We've been ticket holders long before you, and we'll be ticket holders long after you. And to that point, in commerce and you know, driving things through business, it's hard to dispute that.
It's not hard to dispute.
I don't associate with my former NFL team. Not very much at all. There are fans that have been there before LeVar was drafted. Years, yeah. There are fans that their families are connected to it. So it's hard to dispute saying that a loss may mean more to the player in that moment than it does to that fan.
Well, one, we just have to know the psychology of these moments. And the dynamic is emotional thinking is not fluent with cognitive thinking. Any emotionally charged environment, you start to think less and you just react more. That's just everybody.
Instincts.
Okay? So we have an emotionally charged athletic event with people who are not in the same emotional space, wherever they are. Mm-hmm. That's one. But two, let's just be real about it. I'm going to tell you how I feel about fans. I never have love for the fans because they never had love for me. Deep love. I'm talking about half my life. I was a guy who was good in school, good in sports, and I have fans.
Freezing batteries.
Freezing batteries. I didn't have fans. And I'm not saying this to diss fans. I'm telling you,
you deep was on in that my journey core, alone.
I did this. And then all of a sudden, you want to come to this production.
And matter to you.
And matter to me. Okay, I'm going to tell you, you can be a part of this production, but play your part.
Right.
Because I'm going to play my part. I know when I do well, and when I don't, boo. Right. And that's it. Now, in real life, why social media comes into play is because we have dehumanized ourselves to a point where you're like, you're no different than me. Well, if I'm no different than you, you can't just walk up to me on the street and disrespect me. Yeah. So why do you think you can in my workplace?
Well, Myles Garrett showed that you can.
And that's the thing. So before social media, look, Vernon Maxwell went up in the stands and gave somebody some hands. Yeah. And it happened before and it's happening now. It's just fans don't understand there is a line. And I'm telling you right now, we ain't cool like you think. I was signed thousands of balls and millions of jerseys. Mm-hmm. But know your place, because I know mine.
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houshmandzadeh is back.
Let's return to the NFL. Yeah. Someone needs to learn how to spell TJ Houshmandzadeh. Where Aaron Rodgers launched himself into the MVP conversation with a huge game this week, throwing for 429 yards and 5 touchdowns and rushing for one more en route to a win over the Oakland Raiders. Mm. According to FoxBet, Rodgers is now the co-favorite to win the award at plus 275. Wow. He's tied with Russell Wilson, while Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, and Christian McCaffrey round out the top six. Ooh. Question here is, who's your MVP right now? Not a prediction, right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
It's the new era, Lamar Jackson. Yes, it is. Oh, 2,226 total yards this season, passing and rushing. Just better than 14 NFL teams by himself. And the MVP has always been a traveling trophy, looking for the greatest player with an even greater story. Can we find him? And Aaron Rodgers winning the MVP again? Okay, it's amazing. He's a great player, we know. But what's a greater story? The quarterback that could. The quarterback that they said couldn't even throw, couldn't play quarterback, should have played receiver. And not only that, is doing it his way and it's working. Was he 11-3 as a starter? Unreal in the regular season. So all those things considered, if Lamar Jackson continues at this pace of production and they continue to win, Lamar Jackson's the MVP.
I'm not going to be like FoxBet. I wouldn't give a co, but since I got to pick one, I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers.
He's had one game.
One. Thank you, Whit. One and a possible.
How many games did the Green Bay Packers win last year? They
Seven?
Won six.
Six? Six?
How many
six.
Games have they already won this year?
Six.
They've already won six games.
McCarthy gone.
And what was the narrative? Oh, McCarthy. How is he going to coexist with LaFleur?
MVP?
The way he's playing right now, yeah, they're 6-1. And
Mike Pettine, the defense?
The defense started off well. You know where they're ranked?
How it started? They were good in the beginning.
But what are they now?
They're
27.
Yeah.
And so because of, you talking about a good story, Mike McCarthy, he leaves, he gets fired. Oh, how is Aaron Rodgers going to react with Matt LaFleur? Are they going to be able to get along?
Who would have been your co? Because you really bothered
me. Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson.
Oh, well, that's what you really
know. Lamar Jackson would have been my co-MVP because of the way he's playing the game. He's
Why y'all overreacting to one loss, man? Russell Wilson's still the MVP right now. Mm. Why y'all overreacting? It's one loss. Mm. Tough game. They lost.
But he lost to another MVP game. Candidate, though.
Huh?
He lost to another MVP candidate the way I played
it. Your Lamar Jackson is over. Aaron Rodgers, to me, shouldn't be in the top six.
Huh?
Thank you. I'm with you
to
there.
To me, it's Russell Wilson.
They won six games last year. They're already 6-1 this
year. Not because of their defense. That don't make him the MVP. Yeah. Give LaFleur credit. Mike Pettine getting some defensive players credit. To me, it's still Russell Wilson. And I would put McCaffrey and Lamar Jackson kind of on the same level. When I still think Deshaun Watson can play himself into it. But it's still Russell Wilson, man. They lost one game.
This is my issue with Aaron Rodgers. Then I get to Russell. Aaron Rodgers, we were talking about it before, is playing spades. He had one in a possible good game. Like the one we saw this weekend and the loss that they had against Philadelphia. And other than that, you're like, Aaron Rodgers got games where he had 203 yards passing, 209, 235, 238. That's not MVP numbers. I don't care if you're winning or not.
And that's what's so good about this year with the Packers. He doesn't have to win every game. He's going to get you 4-5
games. And that's going to make you MVP.
That means you're not an MVP.
Cousins should be in this ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
So you say Russell Wilson.
Stephon Gilmore should be in. Patriots defense is maybe the greatest thing we ever seen.
But it's a collection.
Somebody.
It's not one player. It's a collection.
And it's a collection with the Green Bay Packers because it's not just Aaron Rodgers this year.
So you said you gave just earlier today.
Yeah.
You guys gave all the credit to Belichick. Yeah. Now we're going to say Stephon Gilmore should be the MVP.
I'm not going there.
I didn't say he should be the MVP. I said ahead of Aaron Rodgers. I can give up some
Russell
more
Wilson
names.
Certainly before Aaron Rodgers.
Luke Kuechly.
y'all hate on Aaron Rodgers.
No, we are looking at the numbers. Look at his numbers this year. I mean, there was a time where we were like, this relationship is not working a few weeks ago. There's a time where we're saying Aaron Rodgers, less of you is more of the Packers. And now that's the MVP.
TJ.
Who is he playing with? Who is he throwing the ball to?
Undrafted free
look
agent.
Look who he's playing
with.
That's a
good point.
So when you do what he's doing with the guys
TJ
around
played
him.
The Raiders, man. It was
it
the
don't
Raiders.
Matter. Y'all just earlier today again, y'all said it don't matter who you play.
You're getting better at this. That's good.
No more segments off. No more segments off. If you're doing his homework on them segments off, hell no, come back here. I say it's Russell Wilson, seriously, if it's not Lamar Jackson or Christian McCaffrey. Let's just be real about that. That's it.
No, not Christian McCaffrey. He just had 22 carries for 31 yards.
Touchdowns in that game, TJ.
He averaged 1.3 yards a carry.
Oh, now the numbers matter, but when I give you four games, Aaron Rodgers at 230, all the numbers don't matter. Look who he's playing with.
Everybody getting better.
You got Cal Allen at quarterback, man. Come on.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Yeah, Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Patriots coach Bill Belichick. Look, today I actually deserve to be the big dummy of the day, so go ahead.
Oh, you remember? For
the first time.
Okay, man, let me tell you something. Big dummy of the day.
Yeah.
Go to the person that told Zion Williamson, young fella, your knees is the first thing to go.
What a shock.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did.
I said your foot.
Take it from Uncle Jimmy. Your knees ain't the first thing to go, boy.
That little blue pill, you need a blue pill?
Blue pills help you out with them big M&Ms.
Blue M&Ms.
Let's talk about Bill Belichick, who coached the Patriots to yet another dominant
mixed up
defensive performance last night. Once again, I lost money betting against New England. And once again, I'm swearing I'll never bet against them again. Ooh. All right, Marcellus, you think I'll finally stop?
No.
Nope.
No, you're a gambler. This is what you do. You're Vegas.com. It goes right to your email, man. It's all good, though. Stop betting against the Patriots. If you're going to be a gambler, fine. Take some risks, but that's just stupidity right there.
It really
Never
is.
Never go against the Patriots and Belichick, man.
It really is. I almost wore another clown suit today, but I did not. Uncle Jimmy, you have any thoughts on my betting against the Patriots?
Marcellus?
Yeah.
You know what's worse than dumb and dumber?
It was worse.
Being dumb and disrespectful.
New movie. Okay.
And right now, my nephew running 2 for 2 in that compartment. Now, listen here. Let me explain something to you. I never have been, nor do I ever profess to be, a rocket Scientologist. But even I know not to be betting on the New England Patriots.
Betting against the New England Patriots.
I don't bet against them.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Look at me. Let me tell you something, Marcellus. I don't know how much money my nephew bet last night.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you it could have been my rent money. Man, I'm sitting up here last night eating Ramadan noodles while my nephew's sitting up here and Wally's eating truffle chicken. Now, I don't know what the hell a truffle is, but I know if you put it on the chicken, it take the value up about $100.
Hey, they got the best truffle chicken in the world, man.
Well, look at me. All that's fine, well, and good, but tell me this. What good did it do me to lose 40 pounds if your ass was just going to turn back around and find it? I guess that's just that fat cat syndrome you got.
Hold on.
Check this out. Wait a minute. Let me take it a little bit further.
Go ahead.
I couldn't get him to help me with a $300 parking ticket. But his ass is all over the newspaper because he done got some little colored boy out of a China prison. Don't nobody in the family know who the hell this boy is. Me and his mama was on the phone for 3 hours trying to just figure out where he came from. His mama called me talking about, Jimmy, who the hell is this Wardell Brown?
Wendell.
And why is he spending our money? Look, man, I could be wrong, but let me tell you something, Whitlock. Yeah. You've been doing more business over in China than the NBA lately. Now, granted, I'm going to give credit where credit due. You did help me out with the $300.
Oh, he did?
Man, but he didn't say nothing about that 17 points he tacked in on at the end of it.
Nick's check cashing over here?
Hey, man, I don't know, man, but I tell you what, they need to stop calling him Whitlock and start calling him Shylock. Now, I ain't going to be disrespectful and call him a loan shark, you know, but he is getting kind of big, so I'd call him a loan well. Listen here, though. Man, let me tell you. Like the book of James say, a fool and his money shall soon depart.
There it is.
Yeah.
And based off both of those teachings, I'd like to make you a preposition, nephew.
Proposition.
A preposition. Go ahead. Next time you want to bet against the Patriots,
yeah,
holler at Uncle Jimmy. He'll cover it. Matter of fact, next week, they giving the Browns 14 points. Uncle Jimmy give you 16. I see that. Long as it's understood that money on the wood make the game go good. And I'm going to tell you like I told the Blue M&Ms. I'm in it to win it, so I damn it, if you got some money, let's spend it. That go for you, too.
I ain't got all right, nothing listen, to do with that.
Now I marked Belichick down.
For
come
what?
Down big time. Because he cost me money and I'm mad good. As hell. He's still a GOAT, but just barely an 80.
Yeah.
I mark him down 20 points in character all the way down to it. Edmund 30 all the way down to it. He picked up Antonio Brown.
How'd you move him down
yeah.
in job performance all-time status? He's still 25.
Because I had him at 120 last time.
That's amazing. Yeah. He's a GOAT. What else can you say about
nothing.
Him, man?
He oh, my God.
To kill it.
Twitter has him 93% GOAT status.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.